Anyone who's engaged in Christian ministry understands that conflict between colleagues is inevitable. Strong leaders will share differing opinions, and even spiritual giants will face conflicts with their trusted teammates. So, how should we navigate our relational challenges with grace, forgiveness, and wisdom? Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll teaches from Acts chapter 15, which describes an epic showdown between two historic Christian leaders. As we examine the issue and their responses, we'll discover practical lessons on resolving conflict. Chuck titled his message, "The Day Two Missionaries Duked It Out."
Let me draw your attention to the last six verses of the 15th chapter of the book of Acts. If you'll turn, please, in your New Testament to Acts 15, I'll begin reading at verse 36 down to the end of the chapter, verse 41. Acts 15:36. After some days, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaimed the word of the Lord and see how they are." Barnabas wanted to take John, called Mark, along with them also, but Paul kept insisting that they should not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there occurred such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another. And Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and left, being committed by the brethren to the grace of the Lord. And he was traveling through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the life of the Apostle Paul on your own, be sure to purchase our Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook by going to insight.org/workbooks. Chuck titled today's message, "The Day Two Missionaries Duked It Out."
Some things sound so outrageous when we hear them, we can hardly imagine they're really happening. For example, several years ago, I heard about a young interviewer who was spending time with the late little Catholic nun, Mother Teresa, and he was curious about a number of things that had never been asked her, so he decided to ask her if she had any other dreams in life. Did she ever want to be anything other than who she is? And she said to him, to everyone's surprise, "Well, I always wanted to be a flight attendant." Now, when I heard that, it seemed outrageous to me to think of Mother Teresa handing people Cokes and coffee and serving them little toy meals on an airplane. It just didn't seem right. One of my all-time favorites is a story of a grandmother who had a rather precocious 7-year-old granddaughter who was determined to find out how old her grandmother was. And grandmother wouldn't tell her, and the girl kept pestering her, and she said, "I'm not going to tell you my age. Only your granddaddy knows how old I am, and you don't need to know. It doesn't matter." And she was fixing supper one evening, and the little girl was much too quiet, and so the grandmother slipped upstairs to her own bedroom and walked in, and there was the little girl with the contents of the grandmother's purse spilled out on her lap on top of the bed. And she had her driver's license, and she said to her grandmother when she walked in, "You're 73 years old." She said, "Well, yes, I am. How do you know that?" She said, "Well, I see the date of your birthday here, and I subtracted that from this year, and you're 73. And she kept looking at it. She said, "You also made an F in sex." Now, you know, you don't think of a 7-year-old as saying something like that. It seems a little outrageous for a child to make a statement like that. And speaking of outrageous, the day two missionaries duked it out is a sermon title that just sort of grabs you when you look at it, and it just seems too outrageous to imagine. I mean, missionaries don't duke it out. They don't even argue. Matter of fact, all they do is pray and talk about Jesus. But you smile down inside if you are a missionary and you hear that, or if you've been with them, because you know that they are real people just like any others of us. And there was a day when, if they hadn't controlled themselves, they would have literally had a fight, I'm convinced. And these are not wild-eyed, carnal men who were out to get one another. These are the men that we've respected now for quite some time, Paul and Barnabas. I mean, it's amazing. It's outrageous to think that men who are this mature and this godly, and I mean that sincerely, who have had these seasoned years of knowing and walking with God, who would stand toe-to-toe against one another and be engaged in an argument so heated that they could no longer work together, nor did they ever again. One of the things that has attracted me to the Bible through the years has been its realism. When God paints his people in the scriptures, he paints them warts and all. Unlike us, who would prefer to airbrush them, God shows us the whole truth. When he presents Moses, he doesn't hide the fact that he once murdered an Egyptian. When he gives us David, he doesn't keep us from that walk on the roof of the palace and the adultery that followed and the murder of Bathsheba's husband. And an evangelist like Jonah, who had the chance of a lifetime to lead the largest revival in the history of time, doesn't keep us from seeing him in all of his skepticism and ugly racial prejudice. And when we see Paul and Barnabas in the last few verses of Acts 15, here they are, outrageous though it may seem, in such a heated argument that they literally could never come to terms with it. And they separated, never to return again to a mutual ministry. Let's remember where we are here. Paul and his wonderfully close, perhaps closest of all friends, Barnabas, have finished the first journey and they've set new records, founded churches and endured persecution, and Paul now bore the marks of a stoning from Lystra. And they return with wonderful reports of God's taking his grace to the Gentiles. And they spend a long time in Antioch after the report. And then right on the heels of this, they are leaders in what has come to be known as the Jerusalem Council. First 35 verses of Acts 15 tell us of how these thoughtful and carefully thinking theologians hammered away at the grace of God and determined that Gentiles do not need to be Jewish in order to be believers. Though some said they must be circumcised and they must keep the Sabbath and they must order their lives according to the law, Paul and Barnabas and Silas and others like James said, no, no. If a Gentile comes to Christ, if a Jew comes to Christ, it is all by grace through faith, apart from works, based on the finished work at the cross, where Christ paid the penalty for their sins as he paid them for ours. And they remained a long time, according to verse 35, where they teach and preach the word of the Lord, chapter 15, verse 35. These are the kind of men we're talking about. These are the men you and I would stand in line to be with, to spend an evening with. This is Paul, and this is Barnabas. Who would ever expect anything near a disagreement, to say nothing of a heated argument between men like that? So much for the setting. It all began with an idea, Paul's idea, verse 36. Let's return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are. How wholesome. Let's return. How helpful. Let's visit the brethren. And how exciting. Let's see how they are. Let's go together. We've done it before, Barnabas, and there will be less surprises and these are godly men doing godly things, theological issues being resolved, and the word of the Lord being taught between them. What a great idea. And Barnabas responded, great thought, let's do it. Let's take John Mark with us as we go the second time. Verse 38 said, no, John Mark won't be going. And Barnabas said, oh, yes, he will. And Paul said, oh, no, he won't. And Barnabas said, oh, yes, he will. Verse 39, and there occurred such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another. The idea wasn't the problem. Both of them wanted to go. It's what followed the idea that created the rift. And they showed themselves warts and all. Campbell Morgan writes of this encounter, I'm greatly comforted whenever I read this. I'm thankful for the revelation of the humanity of these men. If I had never read that Paul and Barnabas had a contention, I should have been afraid. These men were not angels. They were men. It's a good word. They're good men. They're godly men. But they're not perfect men. And it must have hit Paul wrong to think that Barnabas would have a wild idea like taking along a defector. I like the words of Dr. Bob Cook. God reserves the right to use people who disagree with me. We come a long ways in life when we realize that there may be another idea outside the one we thought of that goes even further that God may be pleased to bless. This is a good time for me to pause and share with you maybe two or three very important things to remember regarding disagreements. I don't often ask you to do this, but somewhere in your printed materials, find a place where you might be able to write some things down. Maybe you'll never have another disagreement, but I think I will have some, and I've written them down, and I think it might be helpful, should that occur in your life, to be able to go back to these three things and to review them. Here's the first. In every disagreement, there are the same two ingredients. In every disagreement, there are the same two ingredients. First is an issue. The issue is objective and it involves principles. There's an issue at stake and it's clearly stated and there are principles that surround it. Here's the second ingredient, various viewpoints. And the viewpoints are subjective and they involve personalities. You look at it one way, and if I may, your wife looks at it another way. You look at it one way, and your son or daughter looks at it another way. You look at it one way, and your roommate at school looks at it another way. It's very subjective. And the way we look at it has a lot to do with how we're put together. That's why I say it involves personalities. If you can keep those simple factors in mind, it will really keep the heat down so that you can work your way through an argument rather than stomp out in the middle of it. There is an issue that involves principles, and they are looked at from different perspectives. In fact, I could put together a definition of a disagreement, having said what I've just said. A disagreement is a conflict that involves an issue seen from opposing points of view. It's an issue that is looked at from different or opposing points of view. This is the issue. This is how I see it, says Paul. No, this is how I see it, says Barnabas. That brings up a second comment. In many disagreements, each side has validity. Both sides have strengths. Sure, every argument has its weaknesses, but both sides have their strengths. Neither side is what I would call a slam dunk. If it were true, there wouldn't be an argument. Of course, from your point of view, it is a slam dunk. Or from my point of view, it's so obvious, I'm surprised the other person doesn't see it. But there are strengths in most every disagreement. Both sides have validity. Here's a third comment I would add. In heated disagreements, someone usually gets hurt. In heated disagreements, someone usually gets hurt. And by the way, the higher the heat, the deeper the hurt. The deeper the hurt. I don't care what level of maturity you have reached in your walk with Christ, you are not immune to hurt. Words strike like shrapnel embedded in the brain, and you don't forget them. Especially if during the argument, character assassination occurs. Someone calls you a name or implies a certain thing about your character. I know a friend who is in his late 70s who can still remember decades ago when his father-in-law, in front of the whole family clan on a Thanksgiving afternoon, looked at his son-in-law and said, "You know," and he called his name, "I never had much use for you anyway." And this man now, white-haired, really getting up in years, remembers not only the words, but the feelings and even the tone of that statement that Thanksgiving afternoon. It hit like shrapnel. In heated disagreement, someone usually gets hurt. Now, I give you those three, not because they're all that great or insightful, but they're necessary to remember. If you and I will remember those three statements, it will help in the next argument. It will help you become a little more objective. Now, I'm going to ask you to sit behind the bench. You're the judge. Today, we're going to work hard at being neutral because we like both Paul and Barnabas. Some of us are more like Barnabas than we are like Paul. Others of us are more like Paul than Barnabas. And to be sure, they are from a little different background and they see things differently, which is what happened in this case. Now, what is the issue? The issue, objectively stated, is should a person who has walked away from a serious responsibility be given a second chance? Worded another way, should someone who leaves people in the lurch be allowed to go again on a similar mission? Barnabas says, yes, by all means. Paul answers, no, absolutely not. Obviously, they have opposing points of view in this particular issue. What's Barnabas thinking? When we read Barnabas wanted to take John Mark, don't think it was just sort of a shrug, kind of like a nice idea. Would you please? May I, Paul? This word wanted is in the imperfect tense in the Greek, and it is from a word that means to will something. I'm telling you, Barnabas willed it and wished it and stuck by his guns. The young man is going. He has every right to take the trip with us. Sure, he failed. Sure, he walked away. No one's denying it. But Paul, nobody's perfect. He was young and inexperienced several years ago. He blew it only once, and we still made it. Yes, it was hard, but we made it. And we had a difficult time, and we missed him. But he's learned a lot from this experience. And I know he's willing to go again. He not only needs our encouragement, he could use our endorsement. And what else are mentors for, if not to give us endorsement when we are weak? One of the reasons you have been, your mentor has endeared herself or himself to you is because they stood with you when most people stood against you. They were there. Barnabas says, this is our chance. And you can't forget, they were cousins. They were. The letter to the Colossians tells us that Barnabas and John Mark were cousins. And when blood enters into it, it's almost impossible to be completely objective. Because of that and other reasons, Barnabas wanted to take John Mark. Paul's response in verse 38, the imperfect here again is revealed in the way it's translated, kept on insisting that they should not take him along. Can't you hear Paul? He has proven himself a quitter earlier. Faithfulness is job one in among God's servants. Remember, Barnabas is looking at the man. Paul is looking at the principle. Barnabas is looking ahead, Paul is looking back. We'll need strength, we'll need stability, we need someone with a proven track record. If we thought it was hard the first trip, can you imagine what we're going to encounter on the second time around? We need confidence if we're going to lean on this man and rely on him to be there when we need him. But Paul, you're the preacher of grace. The book is full of people who have flown higher even though they failed. Moses was a murderer. Jephthah was rash in his judgment. Rahab, the harlot. Jonah, a racist. Paul, you yourself, once a persecutor. It's tough, isn't it? It's a tough decision to go with this. And some of you are feeling very magnanimous right now. You're thinking, well, Paul, get with it. Would you loan money to a person who didn't pay off his first amount that he borrowed from you? Would you loan him more money? Would you loan him your car if he wrecked the other one? Would you let him stay in your house if they tore up the other apartment when you let him stay before? Well, suddenly it gets a little bit uneasy. And that's why it says there was a sharp disagreement. I'm sure Paul could have quoted, "Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint." Proverbs 25:19. It's a verse. Literally, it says, putting your trust in an unreliable man is like chewing on a sore tooth or trying to run on a broken foot. You ever done that? Ever had somebody else leave you in the lurch and you're left with the whole shooting match? I'm sure Barnabas could have quoted David, the adulterer. He pardons all our iniquities as far as the east is from the west. So far has he removed our transgressions from us. I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He lifted me up out of a horrible pit and put my feet on a rock and established my going and put a new song in my mouth, even praise to our God. God is a God of second chances. It's funny what verses we turn to support our position. His compassions fail not, they are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness.
You're listening to Insight for Living. Chuck Swindoll titled today's message, "The Day Two Missionaries Duked It Out." It comes from Chuck's biographical series on the life of Paul, a man of grace and grit. Stay with us because we've set aside several minutes to hear a closing comment from Chuck. But first, I want to remind you that time is running short to request a brand new booklet written by Chuck. It's called Worthy is the Lamb. It features a personal story from Chuck about a sacred moment of worship and praise. I'll tell you more about it in just a moment, but first, we have a very important reminder about a deadline we're facing. 4 weeks from now, Insight for Living will complete another ministry year. And we're in a virtual race to the finish line. Here's Chuck.
There's a lot at stake this month, and we know that when all of us band together, we can easily reach the June 30th goal. Our mission at Insight for Living Ministries is to make disciples, plain and simple. And that means we're equipping Christians here at home as well as around the world to think biblically, so that Christians are prepared to act biblically. We want the truth of God's Word to flow through the veins of every listener, like healthy red blood pumping life into the hearts of every follower of Christ. I love the way Charles Haddon Spurgeon once put it. With a twinkle in his eye, Spurgeon wrote this, "It is blessed to eat into the very soul of the Bible until at last you come to talk in spiritual language, and your spirit is flavored with the words of the Lord so that your blood is bibline." I love that line, so that your blood is bibline. By the way, what's your blood type, Chuck? Next time they draw a sample from my arm, I'm going to tell the nurse, "I'm bibline." By the way, what's yours? Here's the point. June 30th marks the end of our financial year. Our needs are enormous, no exaggeration. But really, it's not about money. It's about equipping clear-thinking Christians day in and day out. I'm calling you to be part of something phenomenal. God will use your gift to cultivate Biblean Christians by investing your charitable donation in Insight for Living Ministries. You're equipping others to think biblically so that they're prepared to act biblically. Take down this contact information and then please get back in touch with us today. Together, let's accomplish something phenomenal.
And it's easy to respond to Chuck Swindoll. You can feel free to speak with one of our ministry reps by calling us at 800-772-8888. You can also give online at insight.org/donate. To send a check in the mail, address your donation to Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. All of us here at Insight for Living invite you to follow God's lead and encourage you to set aside more time for Him. As an inspiration, Chuck has written a brand new booklet for you. It's called Worthy is the Lamb. Through a highly personal story, Chuck offers an inside look at how you can sit back and let the wonder in. We'd love to send you Chuck's new booklet, Worthy is the Lamb, and we're pleased to give it to you when you make a much-needed contribution toward the ministry of Insight for Living. Again, you can write to us at Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Our phone number again is 800-772-8888, or go directly to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us again when Chuck Swindoll describes the day two missionaries duked it out, Thursday on Insight for Living. The preceding message, The Day Two Missionaries Duked It Out, was copyrighted in 2001, 2003, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Incorporated. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.